We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Good morning, diarrhea!
It's time to wake up. It's 5, and we're live.
Oh, is this thing on? I don't care. I want him to hear.
This is the pregame show, your early morning shot of sports on 95.7, The Game.
Come on!
Good morning, and a happy Thursday. It was an eventful Wednesday. For one, I think Gabe Kapler's introductory press conference lasted longer than the Warriors-Lakers game last night as the Lakers pummeled the Warriors 120-94, but can you put GST1 up? We're back.
All right, I'm here.
But that press conference lasted forever.
58 minutes. 58 minutes. A lot of it spent on some off-the-field issues from what happened in the Dodgers organization. That was a big chunk of that 58 minutes. I mean, pretty much almost longer than our show here.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is. When you count the commercial breaks, in total, it was long. A lot of it was based on just his opening statement, which it felt like that took forever. He's really trying to push the fact that and push the narrative that he's all about diversity and equality. Pushed that twice in the opening statement to make sure that we knew he opened with that and then closed with that because he's here in San Francisco. And I guess that's what he thinks we need to hear when we're out here in San Francisco. Gabe, just need to hear that once.
We're good.
Yeah, we're all okay. It's fine.
He liked using examples. He liked using analogies. Like I had this story once. Or how do you say it? I'm trying to remember exactly how he said it, but it was a lot of analogies and comparisons. Like, oh, and then he'd say something, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, there was this one time. It's like, okay.
Yeah. Right.
Give an example for him, which is fine. It's good.
He was trying to basically tell us that, yes, I've learned from my past, and I've still got some rough patches, and I'm going to fix them. But that press conference was just... If I had to use one word to describe it, it would just be awkward. It just felt weird. I don't know what it was about it. I really didn't have a problem with it, to be honest.
No, I didn't either.
Like, it felt like some people were sitting there going, oh, this Giants season's a dud already just because of an introductory press conference. No, there's only so much you could draw from it. But the entire thing just felt super forced. Like one that I have a very fond memory of is the one where Gruden came in. This is before he traded Khalil Mack and did all these other things. But when John Gruden came in and he had his introductory press conference, you watch that thing, and if you're a Raider fan, you're like, I'm excited. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to this. With Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, if you're a Niner fan, you're like,
very excited.
You're like, this is going to work out. This is fine. I can't remember Bob Melvin's with the A's. Can't remember Bruce Bochy's with the Giants. But this one with Gabe Kapler just felt strange. I don't know what it was. It might have just been all the questions about the controversies that surrounded his past.
It was. I think it was all that questions. But the name that I kept hearing or seeing yesterday on Twitter, which I kind of feel really bad about, was Jim Tomsula. And that comparison. It's like, okay, that was totally different kind of opening statements, obviously. But that's what people were equating it to. Just saying, not that they were talking the same or saying the same type of things, but just how it just felt awkward the first initial time out. And so that's the hard thing, that he is coming in and somebody did ask him, do you feel like you're in a hole right now already? And he's like, yeah, I am. I am in a hole already starting into this. But he said he's going to work on it. He's going to just keep, he's going to dig his way out of here. And he looks forward to the challenge. So look, in the end of this, no matter what it's all going to come down to is getting the W's. It's all going to come down to getting wins at the end. Because guess what? If all of a sudden he brings his team back to prominence, then you're going to forget about it. But if he does it, oh, we knew it all along. Wasn't the right fit.
So he tried to so he set the diversity thing up.
Yep.
Let us know that he's all about it.
He talked to his mom.
Yes. And his parents raised him that way. It's great. Mm-hmm. All right. Then he brought up the Bruce Bochy thing. I thought that went well. I thought bringing up Bruce Bochy pretty much to start out whenever you were going to talk about the team, I thought that was a smart move because Bruce Bochy has been the guy for the past 12 years. So bringing up him was a smart move. Putting Buster in that place that he's saying Buster's going to be the leader. We actually talked about this yesterday. We said maybe the balance of power could shift to Evan Longoria being the leader. And I actually still see it that way, even though he said Buster is, because has he watched Buster Posey in the past couple of seasons?
Yeah, he's just trying to placate to San Francisco fan base here.
Right.
And look, because everybody loves Buster. And look, we all love Buster around here. He's great, but yes, we all understand that he's getting older, but he wants people to realize that, hey, I'm here for your guys. It's all about your guys. I'm excited to see Brandon Belt's long at bats. So that's one of the things he's talking about, even though there's, I mean, is that maybe trying to get him out for trade bait potentially? I don't know.
Did he mention Madison Bumgarner? Out of all the 58 minutes, did he mention Madison Bumgarner? That could have been maybe one that you would have.
That would have been nice to hear.
Yeah, that would have been one you might have want to put on the docket there, because there's a guy who has a qualifying offer and doesn't know if he wants to be with the team in the limit. And today's the deadline,
today's
right?
The deadline, yep. And then it looks like the Padres may have interest in Madison Bumgarner also.
Oh, the Padres definitely do. He probably is going to go to the Braves if I had to put one finger on it, because the Braves, after their playoff woes, the one thing that you know that they need officially is starting pitching, and you can bet that their offense through the regular season is going to get them to the playoffs again. So I think the Braves are going to be pushing for that. The Padres are going to be want to push for that too.
That would be hard to watch him go to the Padres, because you're going to be facing him a lot then.
Right.
That would be really tough to see him come to San Francisco in a Padre uniform.
This press conference was just so, like, Howard Eskin, right? He's mm-hmm. a broadcaster from Philadelphia. He was on with Jolo and Dibs yesterday. He was reiterating the fact constantly that Gabe Kapler, smart dude, mm-hmm. intelligent guy.
Right.
He just seemed to have an issue with disciplining the players in a certain way, which doesn't seem to work. He has an issue with just keeping the stars out there, which is something that is kind of worrisome if he's putting it all on the back of Buster Posey. Because sometimes, toward the end, you saw Stephen Vogt kind of took over for Buster Posey eventually. There were a couple right. of injuries here and there, but when Buster Posey was able to get back into the lineup, they put Stephen Vogt in there because they realized Stephen Vogt was a little more clutch. And that's the sort of thing that Gabe Kapler might not do, just because he's trying to appease the fan base,
yeah.
thinking that we're just the biggest, knowing that we are, knowing how much we care about Buster Posey in San Francisco. It would freak me out if, say, he's on a slump, but he just keeps on rolling him out there because it's Buster Posey and he's just going to keep on doing it anyway. That's one thing that would kind of irk me. But we just heard constantly that it was just he's smart. He's a relatively different dude. John Heyman was out there saying he's not the bro-y type. He's kind of this spiritual sort of out-of-the-box thinker.
I get that.
And that's why I really wasn't all that surprised as to how he was talking mm-hmm. and the way that he was talking. But I just think it was just all the controversy that surrounded everything. It's like, okay, Farhan came right out, just said, you know, he laid it flat out. We're sorry. We apologize. Could have done something differently. Could have sought counsel at the time. Then Gabe Kapler said the same thing. And it felt like San Francisco media finally had their chance to grill someone on something, because they're known as, quote unquote, being soft mm-hmm. with their questions and not asking the right ones. And now this time they have a controversy staring at them in the face. And it felt like the media tried to take advantage of it a little bit. And then it felt like Gabe Kapler was looking at them like, OK, look, I've said all I can.
How
really
much
say.
More do you want?
Like, this is getting a little bit redundant.
I'm kind of with you. I think I also the media almost really wanted to prove that, yeah,
we could grill someone if we haven't put it on our plate.
Media out here. The people that were – look, the reporters that were out there, the questions need to be asked. Yes, a lot of those questions need to be asked, but sometimes they did feel, you're right, a bit redundant. So that's, you're right. It was very repetitive at times. He said it. How many times? I did also think it was a good move on Farhan that he actually took a lot of ownage also in the situation with the Dodgers. And that's something that a lot of people weren't doing. You didn't, you know, you point the fingers at what Kapler did. And obviously he was part of player development, so he was in a different role, obviously. But there was a lot more with the Dodgers organization that needed to take blame for what happened. And nobody was pointing the finger initially towards Farhan, too, you know, because he was part of that organization. So that's one of the things that you got to keep in mind is that, you know, it is a, it's a whole organization thing. Yes, he had a bigger role in it, 100%. But that's something we got to keep in mind. One of the things that I did find interesting that he said yesterday, which I kind of liked, was there was a question asking about kind of like about kind of the, I'm trying to remember exact question, but it was something about like more of the analytics, how you're going to, what were some things that you learned from the past? And he said, you know, there were times I think I would follow almost like, he didn't say analytics, but he would follow what people were saying. Like if a pitcher needs to throw like a curveball, say, but if the pitcher's not feeling it that day, you know, that's not what you go with. You may need to go with that, you know, based on what the, you know, what the analytics say. But, you know, if he's not feeling confident, that pitcher throwing something else. So I think that was kind of a way to appease the whole idea of this is just an analytics guy. He's a Farhan guy. He's only going to do what the numbers say. I think he's trying to kind of go to that whole idea of, hey, I'm kind of like Bruce Bochy. I'm going to go with the feel of my gut.
Right.
Kind of like that. I kind of think that's almost what he was trying to do.
He talked about how there was sort of just this, quote unquote, I guess, delicate balance between going with analytics and then going with the gut, if I'm just going to paraphrase him.
Yeah, exactly.
But there is a fine line between that, but also you're just watching up there, watching Farhan and Scott Harris thinking, oh, these guys, I mean,
Harris looks so young, by the way,
he
too.
Doesn't he?
He looks really young.
I'm watching, I'm like, well, what is this guy my age doing up there?
He's 32. 32
yeah. years old. My goodness.
It's weird to me when I think that executives are younger than me. It's like, oh, man, when'd that happen? I'm not that point in my life.
Yeah, well, this dude is clearly the type of analytics guy that they want. Yep. And in, you're watching up there, and Ann Killian asks the question. She basically said, hey, you know you've been called a puppet with these two up uh-huh. here. Are you going to – how is the balance of power going to work? Is Scott Harris going to be setting the lineup beforehand? Is Farhan going to be doing this and that? And he didn't really – he didn't really sidestep the question or attack the question like I thought he was going to do. He sort of just, I mean, he didn't really say, no, I'm not. He didn't say I'm not a puppet, just straight up. He wasn't really, he could have been a little, I think, aggressive with his answer in that one. I know the introductory press conferences are all about getting to know the media. This is their first glance at you, and this is kind of how you build the relationship. But I'm like, looking at that question, I'm like, you could at least take some ownership here and be confident about it, or maybe he can.
Well, you have your bosses sitting right next to you. It's like, okay, basically, hey, are you going to listen to exactly what your bosses tell you? It's like, that's a hard question to ask or answer in that moment. It's like, how do I answer this without pissing off these guys and not showing that, yeah, I'm a puppet?
Right.
Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. We'll find out for sure, obviously, once the season starts. But that, I mean, that's a question that's, you know, you don't want him, he doesn't want to be too aggressive because at the same time, you don't want to piss off the guys that are, you know, employing you.
Puppet's a little bit of a strong term
to
use for that. Because sure, it's an easy one to use, but in the end, I think it's pretty good for baseball that these guys are actually working sort of together on this sort of thing. And as long as they don't end up, you know, showing signs and cheating and all this sort of thing, like the Astros are doing and tipping the pitches, doing whatever they're doing, like that's fine. But I think it's an interesting new wave in baseball. And finally, you're not going to just rely on one singular manager. You're going to have to look all around. I think that's what we know now is like, we're not going to be looking at Gabe Kapler. If one decision's made, we're probably going to be looking up top now, or at least taking a second guess and thinking, maybe it's not all Gabe Kapler. Maybe it could be Farhan or Scott Harris. You know, so I think that's what kind of that answer to the question showed. But we'll play some sound from this going forward. We also had a Warrior game last night, and the Warriors' defensive woes continue. In these rankings here in terms of stats, I'll give those to you next because they're not exactly pretty, although there is one guy on this team who is thriving offensively. We'll get into all that next. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakadakis, and on the pregame show on 95.7 The Game. 120-94 was your final with Lakers and Warriors. And look, it's, again, when we talk about these games, we understand what the bigger picture is. Look, they're 2-10 right now.
Yeah.
They're
worst in the NBA.
Yeah, it is the worst record in the NBA.
Yes.
But I do not think this feels really sad to say.
I know.
But they aren't as bad as the Knicks.
Nope.
That's where I'm going with that. They aren't as bad as the Knicks.
Not the worst.
They're
second
not,
to last.
I do not think they're as bad as the Knicks, no matter what the records say, because the Warriors have had not a tough schedule, but they've had a pretty tough. They've had a pretty hard one.
Yeah.
Look.
Yeah, they're 29th right now when I'm looking at power rankings.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not 30.
Yeah, they're not
30 yet.
The Knicks,
I think
the Knicks are a worse team. That's where we're at in the season. But last night, D'Angelo Russell was the leading scorer, and that's the guy this season. I'm watching Draymond, and I'll get to a little bit of Draymond sound here in a second. But before the season even started, and we're watching Steph, and then once Steph went out, I'm thinking, what's Draymond going to be like now that he's not on a winning roster? Because his entire career, going back to college, not sure what it was like when he was with AAU or playing in high school, but I'm going to assume that those teams weren't losing this bad either. I'm going to assume they weren't the worst within their division, high school, AAU, whatever. But in college, they weren't the worst team by any stretch at Michigan State. And on this Warriors team, since he's been here in 2012, not the worst team in the league. So they've been playoff bound pretty much every single season since Draymond's been here. And my case was, I'm wondering how he's going to handle just being on that sort of team. So that's one guy I'm watching kind of off the court, seeing what he's like, at least in terms of body language on the court too, but his press conferences off the court. And D'Angelo Russell seems to be that one guy on offense who actually kind of a joy to watch in the past four games since he's been back from this ankle injury. I mean, he's averaging 34 points a game, and he's shooting 42% from three and 51% from the field. And right now, defensively is the problem.
That's the big issue.
You look at the box plus minus for him in those past four games, he's averaging 34 points, but his plus minus is at a minus 7.8. And one thing that can tell you is, not only is he not really thriving defensively, but the rest of the team isn't either. But D'Angelo Russell, he's kind of a joy to watch on offense. That's one thing I'm taking away right now.
He is. He is somebody that's been fun to watch. I am enjoying also little moments from Eric Paschal, too. You know, scoring over LeBron, that was a nice little moment there last night. So that's the thing. It's just the defense is such an issue right now. And I know Ron Adams had apparently taken a step back this year and has been coaching up Jaren Collins. But unfortunately, you have to also think that you're losing a lot defensively, because we saw how much you lost, you know, obviously Klay being out. Just goes to show you how important to this team Klay Thompson is when it comes to defense.
Yeah.
As soon as he went out. And it is nice seeing him on the bench really supporting his guys out there. I do appreciate that leadership role. I think he's really – it's funny. I'm telling you, Papa Klay, Big Brother Klay. We can call him Big Brother Klay. Don't worry. I know
I'm just calling him Klay. That's all I'm calling him is Klay.
He is the one that's become a real veteran. He's become a real veteran presence. I know Draymond's there on the court as that veteran presence, but Klay, I think, is one of those just, I feel like he sits there and has those conversations with them, just kind of thinking about life. What do you think of your life after basketball? What do you think about this? I just feel like that's who he is right now. Don't make that face at me. Don't make that face at me. No, it's Klay. That's how he is. Think about it. What's his girlfriend's name? Laura. What's her name?
Harrier.
Yes. They had a nice little. I don't know if you saw it on Instagram. They were at like some Japanese spa place or something.
Let me guess. Now he's Japan Klay.
Well, no, but he could be eventually. He could be there. We haven't dubbed that one yet. We haven't dubbed that one yet. No, but look. In all honesty, there is something to be said about. I'd like to see him also working with some of these guys, younger guys, defensively, because his defensive prowess basically on the court is so good that he is so missed. And that's something that you're seeing, that you're missing so much defensively. And they're right now on pace for the worst defensive rating right now in NBA history, 117.2. It's bad.
Yeah.
It's really bad out there.
And one thing we're going to continue to do is keep a running tally, because the Cavaliers last year were the worst team in history defensively. Yeah. So I'm going to keep up with them throughout the season to kind of compare the Warriors going forward, just to double check and make sure how just to see how historic this team is defensively. Not only are you missing Klay, but you're also missing Andre Iguodala too. And when Draymond has a couple, like Draymond, we know what you can do, but when you got guys that you can't communicate with, then it's just not going to work. And Draymond spoke after the game about this team communication.
Communication. You know, that's what most guys in general struggle with, communication. It's kind of amplified when you're dealing with younger guys. You know, you always wonder, like, is the communication because you're not comfortable, because you don't know? But half the battle is just getting people to say something. You know, if you can get people to say something, if it's the wrong thing, your teammates can react to the wrong thing. And if you overwork, the wrong thing becomes right. You know, so it's the battle is just getting everyone to communicate. And, you know, that's an area we have to grow in.
And another area they have to grow into is just the rebounding in general. It feels like they're getting beat on the glass every single night. Last night, the Lakers taking it 60-41 on the glass, including 38 defensive rebounds. And that's the thing you're missing with a big man, is you're not getting any offensive rebounds to give you any of those second chance points. There are some stats here, Anna. These are interesting, is how I'd put it. For one, they're second in the league in field goal attempts. So they're getting up shots, but they're 26th in field goal percentage. They're ninth in the league in getting up three-pointers, but they're 23rd with 32%. So, I mean, they're getting up the shots. They're just not executing them, and some of them are pretty dumb.
Well, like Jordan Poole last night, he took 15 shots, three of them from beyond the arc. Guess how many he made? Three.
Yeah, he continues to be
struggling.
He continues to be aggressive, though.
He is aggressive.
And I kept on mentioning it before the season started, or at the beginning of the season, when he was just putting up 15 and only making two shots. I'm like, nah, let him continue to be aggressive and just try and get into the swing of things. He's just started out in a slump, is the way I'm going to put it.
Yeah, but he's got to figure out how to make better shots. Like, not just make the shots, but make smarter shots. I think that we've said this before. That was one of the issues people said when they initially drafted him, is that he needs to play smarter basketball. And again, hoping that somebody like Draymond Green could work with him a little bit. I know it's not about the shooting, but just being able to get that basketball IQ.
I mean, they're second in getting up two-pointers, but 26th in two-point percentage. So the disparity between these is crazy. And the free throws, they're actually leading the league in free throw percentage with 86%. So there you go. There's something to hang your hat on right there.
All right, there we go. Some positives.
So let's look at that, though, and flip it. In field goals given up, they're ranked 30th. And field goal percentage given up to the other team, 29th. In three-point percentage, 30th. And then in two-point percentage, 29th. In free throw percentage, they're giving up, they're actually not too bad. They're 15th in the league, which is about average. But as far as opposing rebounds are concerned, 28th in offensive rebounds, 29th in defensive rebounds. That leaves them 29th in total rebounds. And they are also 30th in giving up assists. And that's what the other teams are able to do. You saw with the Lakers last night, Quinn Cook was throwing better than Mitchell Trubisky last night, as he was just at the top of the key directing traffic. LeBron was just doing whatever he wanted. It felt like LeBron was just playing a playground type of basketball. He had the most inefficient night of all time, getting 23 points on 21 shots. That's all they were doing. They were moving the ball around and just getting whatever shot they wanted. And that seems to be the big issue with the Warriors right now. It's just constant. They're doing whatever they want. That's it. Like, that's all the other teams are doing as of right now. The one thing that's enjoyable to watch offensively, too, maybe it's Eric Paschal going up against LeBron, not showing that fear. That's the thing with Jordan Poole, too. So they're being aggressive.
Yep.
They're trying. They're just not executing whatever they're needing to do. That's it.
Where do you think LeBron is on this? Is it satisfying to see the Warriors in this state, or would you think he'd rather be able to do this against, like, Steph and Klay and Draymond all together?
Well, obviously, it'd be more satisfying to do it against them, but right now, I think he's just enjoying the fact that he's having this kind of resurgence at 37 years old, fully healthy.
Taking a year off, basically.
They're 9-2. The Lakers are one of, if not the best team in the NBA right now. Mm-hmm. You saw the Clippers follow the Rockets last night after James Harden put up 41 and scored the dagger of a three at the end of the game. Like, the Clippers are kind of, they're showing their weaknesses without Paul George now. They need him back as soon as possible. But, and Patrick Beverley getting fouled out for just no good reason. I didn't know what that was. But it seems like the Lakers right now are the best team in the NBA. I don't think LeBron cares about who he's beating, how he's beating them. Of course, you'd get more satisfaction out of it. But
so do you think now, after watching LeBron last year with the Lakers, not going to the playoffs, kind of taking that, you know, kind of taking that time off, basically, do you think that's almost something Warrior fans should look at and say, all right, it's okay to have this kind of down season, because now you're going to have, next year, you have Steph and Klay fully healthy 100%. Joining this team again and taking the best pieces of what you have.
Yeah, when you look at you just want to see Steph back on the court. Like,
and
just
he said early spring.
Right.
He's expected to come back early spring is what he said.
You do want to see Steph back on the court at some point just because you love watching Steph play, but knowing Klay with his injury, seeing him go down in the finals there last season, I'm thinking if you're watching that, you could be like, I don't need to see Klay this season. Just give me a fully healthy Klay next season. Don't even let him try and aggravate that injury anymore. Even if he's 100%, it's fine. Because right now they're on pace to win under 20 games. So I think there could be a sense of, we don't need to see Klay this season. We'd be fine with it if you're looking at the Lakers. That's actually a pretty good point.
Yeah. Next, by the way, they faced Boston, who's won 9 straight. That's gonna be a fun one.
Yeah, Jason Tatum had a weird night the other night. He went for like 1 for 13, I think, but then he kind of bounced back. Jaylen Brown's having a really good season, and then Kemba Walker in this new Celtics team, he is thriving right now, and him getting off the Hornets is the best thing to happen to Kemba Walker. So going on to the best team in the West, and now facing one of, if not the best team in the East. Chilton Auto Body text line 957-955-888-957-9570. Want to continue to discuss this Cabe Kapler introductory press conference yesterday, because it was one of the more awkward things that I'd ever seen in my entire life. But we do want to play some sound from that. We also got some injury updates for the 49ers. One of them we're certain of. We know. But this other one, we don't know. That's the mystery we're going to try and figure out. Stephen Langford, Anna Kakarakis, another pregame show on 95.7 The Game. So we do have some injury updates for the 49ers that we think are going to happen.
Some of them, potentially.
Maybe,
potentially.
Legitimately the most mixed signals I've ever seen as far as an injury update is concerned. You got questionable all the time. Questionable, questionable, questionable. You don't know what that means. Normally, beforehand, coach will be like, they're probably not going to play. So Kyle Shanahan said a certain player is not going to play, but then he said he is going to play, or maybe we'll bring him back. I don't know, Anna.
Maybe he's trying
to confuse
everybody. Maybe that's what it is. Well, he was talking to Arizona media yesterday, and he was talking about the depth at tight end, and he was saying that, you know, Garrett Celek will be back but we don't have Kittle. So to nobody's surprise, obviously, then, you know, you got the media tweeting out George Kittle is ruled out against Arizona, but a 49ers spokesman actually said that Kyle Shanahan meant to tell the Arizona media that he has a plan. He has to plan to not play Kittle on Sunday, but he also has not ruled him out yet.
Has a plan to not play him.
He has to plan to not play him.
Ruled out.
So basically, they don't know if he's going to be ready in time.
Yes.
But he's planning on not playing him. But he's not ruled out yet. Wow. But I know Arizona is also at this point planning on if Kittle is in. So they're getting the game, they're getting their game plan together as if Kittle is in.
All right. We could write a novel about this.
I know.
An investigative mystery novel. Is there such thing as that?
Isn't that what a mystery novel essentially is?
It's a very redundant thing to say. But one thing that was redundant was what happened yesterday in this Gabe Kapler, new manager of the San Francisco Giants, this Gabe Kapler introductory press conference, which we started the show out with this, Anna, but the one word that I could describe it, what's one word you could use, but the one word I could use to describe it was just awkward.
Yes, that's exactly what I was thinking. Just awkward.
It just didn't.
Uncomfortable.
Yes.
That's really what I, you know, that's the word I'm going to go with. You take awkward, I'll take uncomfortable.
All right, there we go. So awkward and uncomfortable is what we're going to go with.
Yeah.
And as negative as that sounds, it's not like I'm going to sit here and think, oh, it's the end of an era for the Giants. It's over for them. They're not going to get back to their winning ways, which they might not this season because it takes a while to build a team. It's not like the NFL where you could be like the Niners where you get four wins and then all of a sudden you come back and then you end up going 8-1. It's not like that. Baseball, it takes time. There could be a quick turnaround, but with this team, with the farm system, you don't know how long it's going to take for a guy like Joey Bart to get called up, to get Hunter Bishop called up. It could take a little bit. But I'm not sitting here after that press conference thinking, all right, well, with Gabe Kapler's hands, this team's just not going to go anywhere. That's not what I thought.
No, but does this make you feel better, though, thinking that Bruce Bochy has decided to help remain with the Giants as an advisor right now? And he actually met with all the managerial candidates. And so he was part of the search. And his choice was actually Gabe Kapler. So does that – this was from Alex Pavlovich, actually. So he reported this yesterday. So if that's the case, does that make you feel a little bit better about the choice, knowing that Bruce Bochy – is happy with that decision?
Actually, yeah. I'm not going to lie to you. That's the first time that I'm hearing this mm-hmm. report. That does make me feel a little bit better about the decision. But one thing that I took away too was it was Gabe Kapler all along. It felt like when you're listening to them yeah. talk, you're thinking, how else could they have interviewed anybody? Like they obviously did. They interviewed nine other guys, eight other guys rather, but. How could you talk to anybody else when you've had this when you've had this much time to just kind of mull over things? And it felt like in the time allotted for the Giants, it's taken them longer than any other team to sign a manager. It just feels like with all the kind of investigation they were doing and all the questioning they were doing of Gabe Kapler, it just didn't feel like they'd have time to do it for anybody else. It felt like when I'm watching this, when I'm watching Farhan talk about it, Scott Harris didn't really say much right. as far as the decision process went, but it felt like this was Farhan's guy from the jump as soon as the Phillies fired him 2 months ago.
Yeah, it seems like one of the words I saw about him was that this was his longtime friend, their longtime relationship. I didn't realize they were that close. I don't know if that's the case, I'm hoping that he's seen the best of it and has the faith that he is somebody to lead this team. He's not like a relationship like a Billy Bean, Bob Guerin, because we saw what that did for the Oakland A's. That was just a dumpster fire in itself. But he has faith in what Kapler can do for this team. And looking forward, I think that he sees that this guy is somebody that can work with the team. He has a positive attitude, kind of a different philosophy when it comes to the game. So he's hoping to bring the best out of these players. We'll see what he could do with it, obviously. But it's a tough spot for him to be in first day right off the bat. I mean, this guy came in and you just see we read it yesterday, the barrage of tweets yesterday from the announcement on Twitter when Gabe Kapler was announced as a new manager.
It's one of the best things you've ever done
best
on this show. Yeah.
I think it was one of the best segments ever.
Yes.
Yes. New mean tweet segment. Thank you, Jimmy Kimmel.
Anyway, continue.
But yeah, that's the thing that he is already trying to work his way up the hill. And it is a very tall hill. It is a mountain that he's climbing right now.
It's very fitting that San Francisco has some of the steepest roads in the world, because the hill that Kapler's trying to climb in San Francisco right now, it is a very steep one. It's kind of like Lombard Street. If I had to put a street on it, it's like going uphill,
jeez,
but also it's really tough to go uphill because you're kind of going side to side. That's how I would describe his kind of battle to try and win over the Giants fan base. And right now, he's at the bottom. He was making his way up a little bit, and then this introductory press conference happened. Then you're kind of, I think it left a lot of Giants fans like wondering, like, what the hell was that?
Yeah, how do you feel right now, Giants fans? We would love to hear from you on the Chilled and Autobody text line 95795. Let us know how you're feeling, because one of the names I told you earlier in the segment, one of the names I heard equating to yesterday's press conference was Jim Tomsula. And it's not necessarily how he was speaking, because he spoke just fine. He was, he had some really great anecdotes. He had some great analogies, things like that. He was explaining things well, but it was more of you're just working yourself into a very, very difficult situation here.
It sounded better than that. Gabe Kapler, at the very least, he seemed like a well-spoken dude. We heard from two guys, actually. John Heyman, for one, Radio.com MLB insider, and then Howard Eskin from Philadelphia. Now, Howard had his problems with how he handled the Phillies roster, how he handled the pitching changes, had a big problem with the pitching coach over in there in Philadelphia. He said the one key for Gabe Kapler this season is going to be having to work with the pitching coach on hand there. Depends who that is. It could be, I think it still could be Kurt Young, but I'm not actually sure whose job
sure
it is. They announced that Ron Wotus is still the third base coach. Got to see what's going up with
good
the
move.
Pitching coach. But he's way more well spoken than.
I don't know that they were a step ahead. I mean, obviously they were a step ahead.
You're not going to get that from Gabe Kapler, exactly. So that's at least one thing we could take away. But he was put in an odd position. I don't know if he handled being put in that odd position too well. It just made it a little more odd. His opening statement was just, it's just opening and closing with the whole, I'm about diversity, I'm about equality. Like, okay, yes. That's all right. We got that at first. You don't need to close with that. It's not a diversity and equality speech sandwich.
He just says too much. That's what it comes down to. He just keeps talking. And sometimes the words just keep flowing out. It keeps flowing out. And it's just, okay, you got to stop now at this point. Just keep it short and sweet. And I think he's just himself. And it's not a bad thing. I think we're seeing him as himself right now, where he's not putting out some fake personality out there. He's not trying to be somebody else. I think you're seeing him just who he is. He's just this guy. He's kind of like that bro, I'm your friend, and that's how I am. But is that going to be good for this team?
See, that's the thing, though, is I kind of got sidetracked just talking about Kurt Young and the pitching coach. But what John Heyman said is that he's not exactly going to be that bro-y type. And he's wondering how he's going to be able to relate to the players because he's an intellectual guy. He kind of thinks outside of the box. And I feel like a lot of people were just getting that from the press conference last night or yesterday. It's just, I don't know if I can relate to this guy all too much. We haven't played any sound from this, but we need to now. And here's what Gabe Kapler brought up talking about the Giants fan base.
Very excited about foundation building. I know that the fan base in San Francisco is not interested in winning once and then going away. Building a foundation that can create a sustainable winning culture year in, year out, competing for National League West titles is something that I'm very excited about.
So you had that, and it all sounded well and good. And then he kind of talked about this as far as building the players up.
You know, one of the things that's come up with some of the issues from the Dodgers is using this as an opportunity. It's a moment that can create a movement. And from my perspective, that means talking about the issues, talking about them openly, not shying away from them. And specifically, when I get in front of Buster and when Woe gets in front of our team, devoting ourselves and dedicating ourselves to first going out and getting educated ourselves, but then educating our players. And as we educate our players, making that as important as the baseball work that they're doing. I think Farhan will tell you that in Los Angeles, one of the things that I felt very strongly about was building people first and baseball players second. I maintain that to this day, and I don't think that I'm going to convince you that that's who I am in this press conference. But I think that over the course of my time in Los Angeles and over the course of my time in Philadelphia, people will say that I cared about people first.
Now, maybe I should have been a better radio host and watched it again, but he kept on going back to those Dodger times and bringing it back to the Dodgers. Well, his last managerial job was with the Phillies.
Right.
I mean, did he talk much about the time there and how he handled situations over there? Because there were some issues when he was the director of player personnel over with the Dodgers. But you were the manager with the Philadelphia Phillies. Like, you're the manager here. Talk about the time being a manager, your first time being a manager, and what you're going to fix from that. Like, he's talking about fixing things as a human, which, like, you know, of course, there's certain issues that happen with the Dodgers that we all now know about. It came to the forefront. If you watch the press conference at all, you heard the questions about it. But was there anything about him going back to the Phillies?
He did. He did mention it, and this is one of the things I talked about earlier, that he talked about the mistakes. So somebody asked him what mistakes he made in Philadelphia that he's going to use for his managerial experience here. And he talked about the idea of, you know, not solely going by the numbers, the analytics, because he wanted, you know, he's seen how maybe if a guy is feeling confident in, like, say, example, a pitcher is feeling confident in, like, a certain pitch, but the numbers say you should go with the curveball. He said, you know, if this guy is throwing a better, I think he said, I don't know what he said, but say he's throwing a better changeup or something, then go with what you're confident in and be more vindicated in your decision. So that's the thing that he was talking about yesterday. So he did talk about it a little bit, but I think the problem is that because the focus was on what happened with the Dodgers, that was the dark cloud over the entire press conference. And so that's where he felt like he had to address it. And I think you could tell that he obviously regrets it. He regrets how it was handled, and he's trying to fix it. But the problem is, though, you can't fix what happened in the past. You just have to learn from it and move on. And I think that's what he's trying to focus, is that he's learned from it. And now he's just got to go on and take this team to a different level, and then also use what he's learned from the past and maybe address new things, like maybe also bring in new conversations in the clubhouse. This might be something that will be something moving forward that he's going to make a big part of. Who knows? They might do some domestic violence initiatives, things like that within the Giants organization to kind of combat that. Maybe they'll do something like that.
This is going to be something. For one, I did get the sense that I was watching it because I was trying to think, okay, what John Heyman said about him possibly connecting with the players. And I think after that press conference yesterday, that's going to be the number one thing I'm going to be searching out for, is can he be that guy who's – because with Bruce Bochy, it felt like he was kind of that cool uncle. Mm-hmm. Not like a dad necessarily, but like sort of like just this uncle of the team, where you can really sit down and talk with them about anything.
Yeah.
So you're wondering if Gabe Kapler can be that guy. Obviously, he's not going to try to fill his shoes or fill the hat.
No, because that's a really big hat.
Because that's a very big hat. Dorms. You got a lot of hat to fill in that situation.
Big dome right there.
But you're wondering, for me, it's just wondering how he's going to handle all of that. I do wish, like Howard Eskin said yesterday, Philadelphia broadcaster, I wish he would have called out the pitching coach in Philadelphia. He was talking about the analytics, talking about the changeups, and Howard Eskin's like, that pitching coach over there in Philly was an idiot.
Yep.
Luckily, he's gone. You know, that kind of thing. I was hoping, you know, Gabe Kapler would have been like, I wasn't working with the best people over there in Philadelphia, so I'm in a little bit of a better situation than I'm in right now.
Yeah, look, in all honesty, at the end of the day, this is going to be a really long offseason for Gabe Kapler.
Yeah.
But once spring training comes around, once the season starts, that's not going to be the focus anymore. It's going to be the focus of what can this guy do for this team. And I think that's when you'll focus on what he did in Philadelphia. Okay, then you're going to equate that, because you're going to say, okay, he did this well in Philadelphia. He did this terribly in Philadelphia. What is he doing here? Did he learn from that experience? And, you know, where is he improving? Where is he improving this team? Because once you're on the field, all things are different.
Here's Gabe Kapler talking about connecting with the city.
I got a text early this morning from a former teammate of mine who remembered back to like mid-2000s, and me saying I was really excited about going to San Francisco because I connect with the city, I connect with the food, I connect with the opportunity to walk the city, which is something that I share in common with Boach. And I can tell you that over the last couple of days, I've walked from the ballpark to Nob Hill to the financial district, and really was witness to what I believe to be one of the most diverse and accepting cities on the planet. And that probably excites me more than anything else about coming to San Francisco.
Name dropping all the different locations. Nicely done.
Yeah, nice work. I mean, you know,
I'm telling you, I
could picture it right now. He's actually, you know what, he's probably doing this right now, listening on the radio.com app. But don't you picture him like being that shirtless guy that's running along the beach with like the armband and the iPhone in the armband?
Yes, I do.
Now he's got the AirPods, obviously, but the armband, the wrapped around the arm, and the obviously that's what an armband does. Mm-hmm. But with the iPhone like right there and just like jogging alongside.
Definitely envisioning that. No problem. I'll get that in my head right now. No problem envisioning that.
It's going to be so different watching that guy walk out to make a pitching change compared to Bruce Bochy. Bruce Bochy toward the end, God love him, but he was struggling toward the end. Anytime watching him make a pitching change, it's just like he did not look like he wanted to walk out of that dugout. But like Gabe Kapler, it's going to be completely different watching the juxtaposition of those two guys.
I think imagining Giants fans seeing him on the street, I think they're going to be fine seeing him around town. Does that make sense to you? Like, I just think that he'll, if they see him around, hey, it's our new manager, I think most of them are going to be kind of like, all right, let's get to know this guy.
And those who don't watch baseball aren't going to think that he's a manager.
Yeah.
Because what you expect from a manager is a totally different looking dude. Like, this is the type of guy you'd expect to be like an NFL strength and conditioning coach on the side, like a get-back coach. He kind of looks like one of those get-back coaches, you know, like Sean McVay had whenever he's going above the white line, which you can't go across because that basically means you're on the field and you have to have a get-back guy. Mm-hmm. I can picture that.
My husband's going to kill me for saying this, but Paul and I were watching yesterday, and the first thing, once I turned the TV on, he goes, damn, that's a good-looking man. And then there's another expletive after that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said this yesterday. We're not used to seeing managers like this.
Nope.
And some people can get, when you're seeing a manager, and you're like, damn, that guy's way better. That guy's in shape that I'll never be in my life. I mean, as we spent the last like 2 minutes just, you know, talking about this guy's physique. But yeah, that's really what it is people, they look at that and they're thinking, I don't like that as a baseball manager.
Well, he's very focused on his health. That's who he is. And then he's made it known on his blog that he's had before. And apparently there was a story going around yesterday on NBC Sports Bay Area that he's so healthy, but he loves ice cream, that what he'll do is a third baseman who saw him do this said that he would lick the ice cream and then spit it out because he didn't want the calories, but he would like the flavor.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That would be a sight to see.
That's just way too much. All right, we do have a mystery guest today. Woo-hoo. For Low. Does Low Know? Coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Then we got Ross Tucker coming up at 8:05. Brad Evans at 9:05. He'll answer all of your fantasy football questions. I went 3-0 in all my leagues last week. First time in my life doing that.
I beat Bonte and he was not very happy.
I beat Guru and he hasn't talked to me. Jesse Sapolu coming up at 9:30, and George Kittle may not play.
We'll see.
We'll have more on that for you tomorrow.
Flip a coin.
But Joe Lowe and Dibs will have more on that today. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow at 5 a.m.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.